Remember that just because something is, doesn't mean it can't change. And just because you haven't seen something before, doesn't mean that it's impossible.
Welcome to the Busy Girls Book Club. We are a podcast that rates and reviews book talks, most popular, talked about books, and tells you whether or not you should take time out of your busy schedule to read them. I'm Catherine.
I'm Casey.
And I'm Caitlin. And today we are bringing you a book that reads like a literary criticism of the U.S. incarceration system. It is called Chain Gang All-Stars, and the premise is prisoners are treated very poorly in the prisons, and a way they can get out is to enter this basically like televised prison fight club, but every fight is a fight to the death. So if you survive 3 years, you can get out. And so this story follows a lot of different people, but most of them are prisoners who are taking part in this Chain Gang All-Stars TV death match.
Yeah.
It's really dark. Yep. It sounds dark. It is. It's dark.
It is very dark, with a lot of critiques and criticisms of the prison industrial complex.
Right. Also some like really funny characters to really kind of help it along. So.
Oh, yeah.
Exactly. Okay. I mean, do you guys have reviews?
Yeah, I have a 5-star review from Goodreads because there's not very many quality 1-star reviews. So I went 5-star, and it says, "Fucking amazing. Pardon my language, but also don't, because this is fucking fantastic."
Yeah. I have a 1-star I can read. It's really short. I mean, it's a longer review, but it's just like only the first sentence is funny. So, 1-star, the literary version of heavy metal. I was like, is that even bad?
Yeah. Well, I mean, not everybody likes heavy metal, so.
Yeah, I mean, that's basically what the review says. But yeah. I think it's like kind of weirdly accurate.
Yeah.
I can see it.
Yeah.
So I have a longer one and then a shorter one. But I liked this longer one because I felt like I related to it a lot. Mm-hmm. So it's a 3-star. It says, okay, so it's a genius book. It's timely, pertinent, necessary, clever, and a complete indictment of the United States and its racist and inhumane carceral system. But once you twig what's going on, you're just along for the violent ride. So yes, it's brilliant, but if you have read the new Jim Crow cast and read the news, you get the point and are left with a violent illustration of what the future could look like without reform or abolition. So in short, it's good, but grim. Fight scene after fight scene after fight scene. I felt like a voyeur. That might be the point. I don't know.
That is a very in-depth review.
That was a really well-written, like, cool, like, not, some people write freaking essays in the review section, but.
Yeah, very thoughtful.
Anyway, I picked this one for you guys, my political reporters. It's 4 stars. It says, this book feels one bad election away from being reality, a devastating commentary on incarceration.
Yeah.
Yup.
Sad. Sad. Okay. Well, the overall Goodreads rating is 4.1 out of 5, and the Amazon rating is 4.3 out of 5. Where did you guys come down?
I actually haven't looked at your guides for once. I am a 4. I think it's a really important book, and I liked it for the most part. I do think there are almost too many narrators for me. I understand why. It just really was kind of jarring at some points. And a couple of the characters speak in really interesting ways when they're narrating. So you kind of have to like readjust every time it switches. And also it was just, I had anxiety the whole time I was reading the book. Like I'd have to put it down and be like, I gotta step away for a minute. I have such great anxiety. Like, I can read a fantasy book and people can die all day long, but this one's just, like, a little too real. Mm-hmm. So, anxiety girlies, watch out. So that's four stars for me.
Yeah.
It is a dark book, and it is futuristic America and could happen. Like, it's something that you could plausibly see happening. And that's what makes it so much deeper and realer. I gave it 5 stars because this book is probably my most thought-provoking book of the year, honestly. Mm-hmm. It stuck with me since I finished it. It took me a while to read because I would stop at points just to think it through and like really digest it. And thankfully I had the time to do that, which made the reading experience a lot more enjoyable. But I think the author does a really great job of not only showing how it impacts prisoners and impacts how the prison industrial complex impacts people who are incarcerated, but also their family members, innocent bystanders, just the general population, the CEOs at the top making money off of it. Like, it is so multifaceted, this book, and like how it shows the whole system and its faults and how it really runs. And I think that's a really unique thing to do in a fiction book. Like, it's a hard thing to do.
Yeah. I also gave it 5 stars. I do think it's a really brutal reading experience. So I understand why it's not 5 stars for everyone. And I think there's like, I think that the author did have good reasons for making it such a difficult read, but I also understand why that makes it difficult to read. And so, because the book just doesn't let up. Like, there's really no moments of reprieve. It does make you really anxious, and it is very, very violent. It also really forces you to look at like the worst cases. And that's one of the things I liked about it, is it didn't shy away from the moral complexity of anything, because normally when people are advocating for prison reform, right, they use the examples that are the most understandable. They talk about the people who are the most objectively wronged by the prison system. And this book actually looked at the people who actually like deserved to be incarcerated and did do the crimes that they were accused of and did really horrible things. And I really think that's why the book is so valuable, but also it's hard to read, and it really like pushes you to question your own sense of morality. So yeah, it's 5 stars for me.
It's a complex book. It's going to be a good discussion.
Yeah.
So just to jump right in, is the book more plot or character driven?
So it's weird because I think it's very character-driven narrative, but mm-hmm. also the thing that pushes it forward is totally out of the character's control. Like, they have to fight to the death, people, and they don't get to decide when that is. There's no real schedule, and the book is driven by the fact that people are continuously dying. So I think that means it's like kind of plot driven, even though it's like very narrative, character-based storytelling.
Mm-hmm. I'm gonna lean character just because I don't think the book would be interesting at all if you didn't get to know some of the main POVs. Mm-hmm. If it was just all these death matches, you'd be like, why am I here? But you get to know the characters, so I think that's what keeps you reading. So I agree with you, like, it's like a tricky one to define.
Yeah, because there is so many characters as well. Mm-hmm. And a lot of different points of views and perspectives. I'm going to lean also plot driven, though, because I think you really tell that the characters are not in control of their situations because they are forced to fight to the death and are in this system because they did things that were wrong. But like, this is like talking about the system itself is wrong. But the main twist that kind of brings about the climax and brings about the book and all the tension leading up to it is plot driven. Like, that's mm-hmm. that's by the game makers themselves. So, well, I can see arguments for both because it's a very character narrative driven book, but it's also like plot is what's keeping it moving forward.
Yeah. Well, Have you / would you read other books by the author?
I have not, and it would really have to depend on subject matter.
Yeah.
This was dark.
Yeah.
Like a good dark, I guess, but it was dark. And so I don't know. I thought the writing style was very unique and I'd be intrigued, but not about something like the prison system because oof.
Right. I'm going to see. So he has another book published. His debut novel was a short story collection. Also in a near future dystopian setting. I actually think I would read that because I agree. This book is so heavy on the prison industrial complex. I don't think I could read another book like this on that specific topic. But I did really like his imagination. Like, one of the reasons this book is so good is it's just really imaginative and makes this like kind of horrific idea very realistic. It sort of reminded me of Tender is the Flesh in that way, where it just felt, and this book felt even more real. It felt like so rooted in reality. Like, I felt it didn't feel like reading a fantasy book. It felt like reading like a realistic fiction novel. And so I'm interested in like reading more of his writing style.
Yeah, I haven't read any other books by the author, but I saw in reviews that they compared this one to Friday Black, which looks like the short stories compilation about the justice system, not necessarily prison, but justice for Black Americans and how they have to navigate the system, which I'd be curious about because I'm always kind of curious about American justice system and American history. I am a political science nerd. And I got a degree in constitutional democracy. So, I mean, it's right up my alley.
Twins.
Right. Also, I just think that like short stories might make things just a little bit easier just because it's
a little more digestible.
Yeah. Yeah,
for sure.
What about pacing of the book? Oof. Did it take you guys a long time? Because I mentioned I kept putting it down.
So I feel like I'm going to be the outlier here. And I like realized that I think I only took me like 2 or 3 days to read this book. And I don't know, I just couldn't put it down. I like blew through it. I like had to know what was happening next. Because I was like so motivated by the anxiety of it all. And also just really, really fascinated. Like, my favorite part of the book is the narratives from different people who are in prison and who are at that moment when they decide to participate in Chain Gang All-Stars. And so I just ate it up. However, asterisk, I would never pitch this book as a quick read. No. I think the pacing is intentionally difficult. And I think that like most people probably did not like read this book as quickly as I did.
I've read it in 2 weeks, so it took me longer than normally books take for me because I'm crazy and can read a book a night, and I had to take some time to sit with some of the things, so I put it down intentionally, but I knew I was going to pick it back up. So I think the pacing is fine. It's just really a book that you want to really digest and sit with, so it's not fast by any means.
No. I did read it in 5 days, and I think it's because I was so anxious I needed to get it done. But there would be days where I'd like pick it up and put it down multiple times in one day and like go do something else. So yeah, not a fast read, but I needed it over with because I was so wrapped up in these characters that I needed to know their fate.
Yeah. I will say I remember distinctly after I finished the book, I just had to go on like a 2-hour walk. Like I just needed time to like decompress from it all. So know that going in, maybe we should mention trigger warnings here. Like it's
all of them.
A violent book about a murder contest with prisoners. So there's murder, like sexual rape. Assault referenced. Yeah.
Racist behavior.
Racism. Yeah, it's very violent.
Yeah. Also, the prisoners all have a past. They've all done something terrible. So yes.
And they do, there's domestic violence, there's rape. Yeah, it's everything. So.
Yeah.
Everything except cannibalism.
There almost
one of our other episodes for that.
There almost was like hints of cannibalism, though.
All right. I don't know what you were reading, but
yeah, I don't remember that, but it's been a minute. Okay. So would you watch a movie or TV show of this book?
No, absolutely not.
Yeah, it's a big no for me.
I don't think any production studio within their right mind would pick that up because it doesn't pass any like TV guides or like movie guidelines. And like, you couldn't put this even on HBO, I don't think.
It's like a darker version of like Gladiator, because that's essentially what these people are prisoners. They're gladiators. The Roman people did this. There's a reason we don't do it anymore.
Yes.
Right. And I think the only way to make it fit on screen and to be a narrative on screen would to be to kind of cheapen it and soften it. And I just don't think that that should be done.
Right. And we'll talk about, I know it's one of the questions Catherine has, but a lot of the most powerful points of the book are in the footnotes.
Yeah.
And I don't know how you put that on a screen.
Yeah, you'd have to do almost like fourth wall breaking information.
Right. All right. Well, busy girl rating, guys.
Oof.
I don't know. I'm torn between a 2 or a 3.
Wow, I'm gagged by that.
I'm rolling 3. It's just like not something for everybody and take some effort to read. Like, had we not been on a deadline, I don't know if I would have even finished it. Like, it's a, I'm not saying it's a bad book. Obviously, I gave it 4 stars, but I don't know. It's heavy, and I don't think it's for everyone, and I'll go with a 3.
You were like me with Tender is the Flesh.
Yeah.
Casey somehow forced me to read it.
Yeah. And this one, too.
Yeah. But I actually enjoyed it. But I think I agree with your 3, though. It's a rough book, and it's well-paced for the book's plot and for what the content is, but man, do you need to have like either a thick skin or like or a willingness to like set aside some pretty dark things and like be in a good place, basically, is what I'm trying to say.
And like, I have a thick skin. Like, I worked in news. I've written stories about these people who end up in prison. Like, but it's still like, I don't know. We'll get into it, but it's dark.
Yeah, I'm not going to drop it as much as y'all. I'm going to give it a 4. I agree with those points. It's dark. It's not a book I don't think that most people could really binge, but I think it's the right length. I think it's important, and it's still has like really, really compelling narratives in it. So I think if you're like emotionally ready for a difficult book, then like I think you should definitely read it.
I will say, I think, and I saw a couple comments that said this, like if you're a book club that likes to dive deep, like this is a book club book.
It's a perfect book club book.
Yes,
it's gonna, I'm sure we'll have to rein in our discussion a little. It's worth some solid discussion.
Right. Okay, well, spoiler alert. If you haven't read it, go read it. You should really read it. And then come back, because we're going to get into our discussion of kind of the whole plot. And also check the content warnings, because, yeah, it's dark. Okay, so the first question we have is, what did you think of this future version of America and the CAPE program that basically gets these prisoners to participate in the television show of death?
It's giving Hunger Games future America, but more realistic in a much closer timeline, you know?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Prison for profit's already a thing. Mm-hmm. The lack of rehabilitation programs for prisoners is already a thing. Maximum punishment for minimal offenders is already a thing. Mm-hmm. Like, we're not that far off from what is here. We just haven't introduced criminal death matches to be televised.
Right.
So. Yeah.
Like, this is their version of the death penalty.
It's basically like prison's so bad, people would rather die.
Yeah.
Well, so
they sign up for the CAPE program.
And that's like the crazy part of the book is because you have to, there has to be like reasoning behind that because the prison system, they basically force labor. And that's what the prison system has become. And there is 100% in America currently, there is forced labor in prisons across the country. But in this case, it's like 24-hour meat cleaving and meat packing and like very, very dangerous professions that they have like 60-year-old men doing for 20 years. Like, it's a very gruesome, detailed book on these kind of subjects. And some of the points of views you see their reasoning behind joining the CAPE program, like you get the lead up to them signing the papers, which I think was also an interesting addition to like have all the legal jargon and like mm-hmm. you have to be of sound mind. You have to make sure that like you're willing to sign away like a lot of your rights. And they make it very clear, like, no, we need to make sure you have your verbal and written consent for this. And you need to seem sane because we could get sued by you. And I was just like, that's crazy to me, like how detailed this author went into like the minutia of like legalese and waivers and just contract law. Like, I was like, whoa, this is a lot.
Yeah. Well, the other thing that was interesting was the experimental tech involved in this. So like the handcuff system that it's basically wrist magnets and also that can silence you and if you speak cause pain, and then the influencer rods.
Yeah.
And it's like stuff, you know, people are secretly working on somewhere out there, like similar projects to create more money for the penal system.
Right. Those are two of the parts that freaked me out the most, but also mm-hmm. resonated with me the most, because I was like, I'm sorry, there's like no way that's not gonna happen, right? Like, you know that they're already investing in technology to make controlling prisoners easier. And so that stuff, I thought, that's part of why this book is so uncomfortable, though, is you're just like, mm-hmm. yeah, that would totally happen. Like, there's already, like Catherine, like you said, there's already lots of prisoners who are working for like 2 cents an hour. And the idea that they would force them to like not speak while they're doing it is like not that crazy. And our prison system is already super punitive and like based on control. And so anything that makes that easier is like something that I think the United States is considering and that private prisons are considering. And so that just made it even more scary because it felt so real. And I think it does a great job of showing you how consent is not actually consent, because the huge argument like in favor of the CAPE program in the book is like, well, they sign up for this, but mm-hmm. that's like what he shows you in like the narratives that are based in prison is like what really is consent. And there's like abuse of prison guards, and there's people who are like barely in their right mind, and people who are doing this as like a Hail Mary because they just can't take their life in prison. And so he's basically like pointing out, right, like, you know, how does a person actually like consent to participate in this? And that also feels like, I think that's what I'm getting at, is he also, I think, constructed the way America would respond to this perfectly.
Yeah.
Right. No one of the prisoners is like, I'm doing this for the fame and the glory. Not one. Mm-hmm. So are they really, they're all being coerced into it, essentially.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. And then like there's an entire chapter near the end just about like suicide rates and suicide in the program, in the prison system. And it like the footnotes very close to home, where it's like, yes, this is a thing. Like many, many prisoners commit suicide because of the things that they are experiencing while in prison. And it just brings up so many like talking points, and like, we don't have the time to delve into like the entire prison industrial complex. We don't have time to dive into all that. But like this book really brings forward a lot of stuff. And like, I think the footnotes are a great way to really even tie it even closer to American history and current day America. But what did you guys think of the footnotes? Did you read them? And if so, were they beneficial to you and your reading experience?
They were scary. Some of them reference real legislation that our country has that I had no idea about? And it gives exact dates. I was like, oh, this is not fictional footnotes. This is literal, actual things that are already laws that people can warp and turn into terrible punishments. And, you know, the stats on how America has more incarcerated people than other nations and how they're disproportionately people of color, stuff, you know, but the way they were written in the footnotes was very stark reminders, very well included, well timed. Yeah, they were awesome, though. Like, I was looking forward to footnotes. If there weren't footnotes on a page, I was kind of disappointed.
I definitely liked them. I don't think I liked them as much as you. Actually, the point that I want to bring up about the world is the reality TV aspect of it all. I thought that was like, because honestly, like, I'm not saying I would ever rationalize or condone a program where people are legitimately competing to the death, but also like the writer does not villainize really the people who watch, right? Like, he actually like really takes a look at why and like how people can like normalize this kind of extreme stuff. And I just thought it was really true, because like, I in no way could have been gotten into this just from like the, because they call it a sport. That's how they frame it, is it's like a sport, which is
hard action totally, sports.
Totally believable. That is totally how they would brand it. You can already totally see people love players and the way the cult of like sports gets attached to this. But like the reality part, like reality television part, is totally how you would get people like me to watch, right? Okay. Because I would never just be like, oh yeah, I'm gonna watch people kill each other. But like,
the watch, in between,
right? Watch
get,
how people
you get deal. The woman's perspective that does watch her, right. Her husband wants her to watch the sports part, but she's watching Link Life and like learning their stories and getting really attached to these people.
Yeah, because it's like you're watching how do people deal with the fact that they have to like kill other people and the strain, and that's like, even though it's so dark, it's would be super interesting. And so I was like, it's so disturbing, but I thought that part was just so well, good.
And the disturbing thing is they're being sponsored. Like, each of the fighters has like a company that's sponsoring them, that is on their clothes, and they'll sponsor ad spots or promotional material and stuff like that. And at first you don't totally believe that any sane company would stick their logo or brand on like death matches, but then they start to justify it of like using that reality TV thing, and that's very embedded into American life. And so this is where a lot of American eyeballs are going to see these people as they, these prisoners, as they interact with each other and interact with different links and like eat food, sleep, have sex. Like, it is quite literally like the all access pass reality TV, and that's how you suck in brands.
Love Island, because we are looking for a true love story. We watch because we want to see what these people are doing every minute of the day that could lead them to drama.
Mm-hmm. Well, and then it also tones down the murder part of it, because that's not the majority of the viewer experience. It's life. That's the majority of the viewer experience. So it whitewashes kind of it helps, the blood.
It makes you think. It makes you not feel as bad somehow, because even though you get to know them, you hear them talk about like they're criminals. Mm-hmm. So you're like, well, they're criminals, so it's okay.
Right. But like the fact that they're all marked with like the crime that they committed to remind people, like, you know, oh, well, this person committed murder already, so it's okay. And we like watch this sport, which again was like my favorite part, because I feel like he really calls into question, like, yeah, people do bad stuff. People do like objectively terrible things. But like, is that a justification for our own treatment of them and the way we like institutionalize people and treat people? Which I think is kind of like a mirror America needs. I feel like we're kind of not ready for the conversation about like, prison is supposed to rehabilitate people, even people who do bad things. And like, if we as a society think people can be rehabilitated, like, are we ready to forgive them when they're done with prison?
Yeah. I mean,
when almost
the prison system is designed to dehumanize. And so we literally don't think of them as people, unfortunately. And that's what this book really calls out, is that what Stax and Loretta are trying to do are humanize themselves to these people and humanize the people around them in very like covert ways so that they can get away with it. And it's because they're like, yeah, because we have these marks on our back, that's the signal for them of like, oh, you're no longer human. It's okay for me to be rooting for your demise or rooting for you to murder more people. Like, it's state-sponsored killing. And it's kind of, it really just shines a spotlight on how we treat other humans despite what they have done in their past, because everyone has a past.
Well, and I feel like it's edging at the moral question of, our prisons are overcrowded, but instead of providing more rehabilitation to keep reoffenders out of prison or get people out of prison, it's providing a different form of population control where people can just choose to enter the death penalty. And like, that is something that prison people probably think about, like prison owners, is like, how do we control populations in overcrowded prisons? And wouldn't it just be so easy if the prisoners chose to remove themselves from the situation instead of offering them a actual way out?
And how can we make more money off of this instead of just reforming the prison system so that less people end up in jail and we make less money? Let's keep incarcerating tons of people, make all the money we can make off of them, and then make more money off of this fight to the death so we don't have to house them. We can just like eliminate them and make money off people watching that.
We can put them in tents in the woods until they die.
Yeah. Dude, it's crazy. Well,
and some of the most disgusting points of views were from like the commentators, the CEOs, the board members in this book. It's just like, you can imagine these discussions happening in a boardroom that don't revolve around death matches, but something else. And it just, it makes your skin crawl.
Well, and I think that was kind of interesting, was even the commentator at the end, who was painted as a slime ball the whole time, he gets to the end and he's like, I don't agree with this anymore.
Right.
Because the two people he had come to admire most in the system were being pitted against each other. It's terrible that it took that. But even he comes to realize, wait, what are we doing? These women are both like weeks or days away from their freedom, and we're making sure only one of them gets it.
Right. Because that really emphasizes the point that it's never about freedom. And they address this in the book, where like part of the reason people find it palatable is there's this promise that, okay, some people will make it out. Right. Like, this can be a way that people can like emerge victorious. And the idea that people can succeed is part of why people agree to like let it happen. And then pitting Stax against Thurwar basically like cracked people's perception that this is about earning freedom. Right. Because two women who probably would have gotten freedom on their own, like, were deliberately foiled instead of allowing them to like, quote unquote, earn their freedom.
Right. And then the people who get to the end and decide they don't deserve the freedom.
Right.
It's also horribly heart-wrenching. So you get that too, where people are like, why would they do this so close to the end, you know? But they kind of paint it as they lost their fight or they were murdered or whatever.
Yeah.
Well, and that's specifically in Sunset's suicide, assisted suicide, because he said, like, he seems like throughout the book, he's dead in the book, but we get flashbacks and we get the reasoning behind his death. He says, I don't feel safe out there. I don't know what I'll do out there. I don't feel like I've been redeemed at all, because instead of actually like rehabilitating these people, the promise is that you'll be freed after 3 years of killing people. Like, all you've known is murder for 3 years. What makes you think that anyone that comes out of that would be a person that can thrive in society?
Well, and they talk about that sort of, because they allude to, they had one person they kind of quickly ushered through this program and got them to the other side. And now they're an analyst on the TV program. So they've made an example to show that it's possible, purely to keep the audience buying into, like, hey, well, if they kill all these people and get out, they'll be great citizens, you know? Like, no, that's a lie. But they have this one person they can use as an example.
Right. And I do think that was one of the points that I also found poignant just for today, because, I mean, A, they make the point, like, where life is precious, where I did think was, like, kind of, like, a great moment in the book. Because then you're reflecting on our prison system and you're like, is life precious, right? Like, it's a good way to kind of reframe the lens of, like, are we accomplishing, like, what we want out of this? And also the fact that, like, right, like, you probably go into prison, or you may have gone into prison doing something bad, right? Like, there are people who go to prison for murder. And at the end of their prison sentence, what do we want to see from them? And is what they encounter in prison going to make them feel or put them in a position to have achieved some kind of growth that allows them to, like, not do that again? And in the book, the answer is no, right? Because you get to the end and you realize you've actually, like, made yourself a much worse person. And you've done things, like, you probably already did things you're not proud of, and now you've continued to do things you're incredibly not proud of. And I think that's how prison works today. Like, you get to the end and you get out and you've probably still done more things to survive in prison that you're not proud of.
Well, and you've given zero skills to Loretta, say. All you've done is had her kill people. So now when she's out, not only does she have no other skills, but she's famous for killing people and will be idolized for that. So, like, how do you live a life post-chain gang on the premise of, I'm a famous murderer?
Yeah. Right. And she'll also probably never see peace because she's a celebrity, quote unquote.
Yeah.
And she's going to be harassed her entire life. And all she's ever known is how to snap and how to go into the basis, like, base human emotions of survival, and you're expecting her to, like, be able to push through that and react in a calm manner to harassment and fandom.
Right. And I also liked, you know, Caitlin, your point where it's like, now as a society, right, we are treating murderers as heroes. And the way people become our heroes is by committing great acts of violence. And what does that mean for, like, American culture in general, right? If we agree that the way a person can become a hero is by doing a really good job killing other people.
Right. It's like, we're disgusted by people who write fan mail to serial killers in prison, but it's literally no different. Like, that does happen already.
Right. And they killed someone and went to jail, and that was bad, and we decided that they're not a human because they did that. But then they kill people for our entertainment, and we decide now you're someone who should be admired because you did it on camera for everyone else. Like,
because you killed other people who did bad things or may or may not have done bad things.
Yeah.
That's okay.
So, speaking of the people who have done the bad things, our kind of two main characters are part of the Aham chain, and it's Thurar and Stax, and they're both towards the end of their 3 years, but they're also lovers. They found love on their chain, and so you get a lot of the Aham chain in its history. But then you also eventually end up with this, you see other chains too, but you end up also with the Sing Attica Sing chain. And the men who end up in that chain, who have a vastly different experience, because not all chains are love and happiness like Loretta and Stax's. Right. What did you think of our leading ladies and all their links?
I loved them. The part I loved the most was the, like, this sort of being their, like, subtle way to show people that they're still human, right? Like, by having a stable chain where people interact like regular people do in kind of, like, regular society, they were kind of showing people, like, we're not animals, we're still human. But the creators of the game didn't like that because it worked. And the chains that were less stable feed the fanfare more because it feels just like watching, like, right, people who are not human, right? People who can't behave and be in society with others. But I really liked the main characters. I liked their romance. And the ending where they had to fight each other actually, like, gutted me.
Yeah. It's sad because of how it ends and how Stax actually kind of won the fight, but she gave it up so Loretta could be freed. But yeah, is she ever truly freed is the question that you end with. And I think it's interesting because Emily, the character who is the wife of the guy who loves this, he, like, fetishizes these women. It's very gross. But yeah, she came in with the reality TV. She starts off with the Aham chain because she's very fascinated by their dynamics. Mm-hmm. But then as she devolves into it, she loves Sing Attica Sing and the violence behind it. And that's how she, it's like a gateway drug into the violence. And then towards her last chapter is when she kind of just snaps and she mm-hmm. brutally, like, is okay with it, and they have, like, really weird rough sex because of it. And it's like, okay, this is weird, but, like, you could totally see where she starts off with being, like, morally against this, but, like, doesn't say anything about it, and then to being fully in the experience.
Well, and that alludes to the influence it could be having on the wider population of violence probably increasing in the people who watch this, just because that's how influence works, you know? And there are little kids that want these people's autographs because they watch them kill each other. And you don't expect some of those children to end up in prison. Like, yeah, it's kind of crazy. I did find interesting in the chains that it does mention one link who is innocent mm-hmm. and has just given up hope so badly that they've entered the chain gang. But otherwise, all the people are like, yeah, I'm supposed to be here and I deserve to die.
Yeah.
It's really depressing.
It is extremely
Except for depressing. The crazy racist people. I was like, okay, whatever.
Yeah, the skinheads. Yeah.
The people with the, like, swastikas on their face.
The erasers. Like, yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. I'm like, yeah. Yeah.
But yeah, I mean, the whole book and all of the many, many, many perspectives just shows how much complacency you have to have in society and just, like, begrudging acceptance for something to exist. Like, how many parts of the system and how many different people have to say nothing in order for it to be a thing? Because, like, Emily could have said something if she was truly morally outraged at the beginning. She could have worked with her husband or tried to convince him against it, or been on the streets with the protesters if she truly found it so morally repugnant. But instead, she just kind of, like, ignores it until she's sucked into it. So it just shows.
It alludes to she's sitting front row by Mari when Mari does the protest.
She is. Yeah. And so it's all just kind of like how many cogs in the machine and how many bystanders have to just sit by and sit back and watch this happen when you could have spoken up and said something.
My praise for this book, my highest praise for this book, is that it somehow does analyze, like, every facet of the penal system and the American, like, punishment system, and works it all in here in one neat little bow somehow to where you could talk about it forever. So, like, major cred to the author because the setup and working that all in is genius.
Yeah. Mari and her being influenced, I think, also was like really poignant because, right, the influencing specifically was something that happened out of public eye. And her being influenced showed people what it was actually like to be influenced. And not only that, but she was not a prisoner, right? So she was not someone who had been dehumanized by the system.
Yeah.
And so, yeah, no, you go ahead.
She was just a protester.
Right.
That's her only crime.
She was interesting because she thought her dad deserved to be in prison, Sunset. I don't know where she stood on her mom because her mom was also incarcerated, but she's still fighting for these people to be humans because even though her dad was a bad person, she understands even bad people don't deserve this, you know? So it was interesting. She's like, I don't think I wanted my dad to be free, but I'm still going to advocate for these people.
Yeah, she didn't forgive him, but she wanted better for him.
Mm-hmm. Right. And her narrative actually felt like almost hopeful to me because, like you guys said, right? Like she's like, my dad raped someone and I don't really know how to feel about that, right? Like I'm not out here saying like my dad didn't deserve punishment. What I'm saying is like, what did you want happen to him, right? Like, was this justice? Is the fact that he got on television and killed people, was that justice? And I think they also demonstrate that there's that point where this woman was like, her sister was killed by someone. And so she was like in favor of the link system. And it does a really good job of showing you like, did this system like avenge your sister, right? Like, did this deliver justice? Do you feel better? Do you feel like you got what you needed and like society is better because your sister's murderer was a link, right? Like, I think it does a really good job of asking the question of like, what do we want to happen from?
Well, and then that scene just between Mari and that girl also points out like the broken families because of A, crime, and B, incarceration. So Mari, both her parents are incarcerated, so she lives with her aunt, and this girl has lost a sibling to crime. So like, when you are promoting murder and crime, it's like just recreating these families.
Yeah. Like she specifically mentions crime is happening despite this system being in place. So is it truly helping prevent crime and helping families heal? No, it's just perpetuating crime.
Yeah. So the influencer thing is interesting because we actually get to hear from the person who accidentally invented the influencer, who herself ends up in prison because she did not want the influencer.
As Loretta's roommate.
Yep.
Yeah.
Whoa. I don't know why I said roommate. Cellmate.
Cellmate, yeah.
Roomies.
Meagles. but yeah, I mean, what did you guys think of like how the influencer came to be?
Another Black woman taken advantage of.
Yeah. She just, like, the fact that her intentions were so pure, like, she wanted to cure pain because she saw how much pain her father was in from neuropathy, which is a very, very painful condition. And it's incurable. So it's just kind of pain and nerve damage that someone lives with. And so she wanted to cure it. And so she isolated pain in order to figure out how the structures work and how she could then reverse it and counteract it. But she's working for a private organization at the behest of her kind of boyfriend. And that's where the money was. So she went there and was kind of tricked into creating this prototype that becomes influencer. And you don't totally know where it's going until you know where it's going in the chapter. And you're just like, oh, man. Like, and then she realizes when the guy comes in, it's like, no, it's perfect the way it is. She's like, it's not ready. No. And then she sets fire to the lab and kills someone accidentally.
But it's just like how many things that we perceive as bad or instruments of destruction started for good reasons. It's this, it's like pointing out that like no matter how much good you think you're doing, someone can come and take it and turn that around. Like guns were made for hunting and look at what we do with them now, you know, like it's the same concept.
Yeah.
Right. And nuclear energy is also how nuclear bombs work.
Right.
Mm-hmm.
So yeah, I mean, this was a very good but chaotic discussion, but I think we're at the end now. So what did you guys think of the ending and, you know, the rewards of quote unquote freedom?
I mean, I kind of guess that's what would happen.
Yeah.
However, the way it was written was gut-wrenching. Because it also like went out with Stax's humor, and you know that like Loretta's life is ruined.
Yeah.
Either way.
Right.
She doesn't want any of these outcomes. She's tired. She's done. And now the only person she cares about has sacrificed herself for her. It's like you feel hopeless, which is, I'm sure, what Loretta feels. And then it's just over. I was like, okay, well, yeah, just twist the knife.
Yeah. I mean, I don't think the author could have done it any other way, because what is Loretta supposed to do? What is she supposed to, like, how do you truly end something like that besides the way it did? Like, there's no really continuation of her story. We can hope that she connects with Mari and works with advocates and justice organizations, but this society is so grim, even though we do see a little bit of light and protest towards the end, that it's kind of like, do we really see a future for Thurwar in society now that she's technically freed, but now she's living with the burden of murdering her love?
Yeah.
Not just maybe end her own life, you know?
Yeah.
Right. I really loved the just poetry of it, because Thurwar survives because a woman sacrificed herself in the very first battle that she ever wins, and then survives again because a woman basically does the same thing again, right? Like she could have died and instead has been like gifted life twice. So, like, the circle kind of completes itself. But also, like, in any other book, this would have been the happy ending, right? Like, the main character won. And instead, it feels so fucking sad. And I think that is, like, really just a testament to the book that, right, like, the hero won the day and you just are like, who the fuck wants that? Like, it's just so terrible. And I like that they both wanted to live. And you know that neither of them would have chosen that. It was, like, very... He avoided any of the cop-outs that kind of let you take solace in what happens. Like, there's no solace.
Yeah, they both fought for their lives and then at the end made a decision.
Yeah.
And then her head was smashed to smithereens. Gotcha. The end.
Oh. Yeah. And it's sad. And you do, I mean, you, it's a cliffhanger in the sense that you don't know what happens to society. And they leave you with a lot of questions about what will change and if things will really be influential. Because, like, Mari's protest may have mattered. Thurwar and Stax's battle may have mattered, but you never know. And so,
yeah, you saw the cracks in the system at the end where Loretta and Stax's work to humanize themselves really did help get them.
Right. Like, with, like, the announcer who's kind of like, yeah. Bullshit.
Yeah, with the announcer quitting, basically, with people real, like, are being exposed to protest. Like, they weren't really exposed to it. It was too small scale. Now it's very, very large scale. And it was right in front of them that Mari got influenced. So you hope, like, he leaves you with a nugget of hope that society can move on from this. But at the same time, the system is in place to make money and to survive. So it's more likely than not that it just rebranded itself and moved on.
I mean, people already watch MMA. How many steps further is it?
People watch Naked and Afraid.
Okay, not the same.
Okay, no.
But left alone in the jungle, naked.
Those people are not prisoners, and they sign up for that because they're
prisoners. No. You are correct.
Sign up.
I think we took a left turn. Let's go to book recommendations.
Okay, I spoiled my own recommendation earlier, but I am going to recommend Tender as the Flesh. It is another kind of dystopian reimagining of the future, and I think it has the same kind of ruthlessness that this book has. It's like very, pulls no punches, goes in really hard with a really, it's a cannibalistic society, and it's just, it's really hard to read, but it's that kind of like heavy, like full-fledged social commentary.
It's shorter though.
Yes, much shorter.
And I'm going to follow you with the future, because it's another near future dystopian book where all the characters are morally gray.
Yeah.
Yeah. And
hits really close to home.
Yes.
And you can also listen to episodes of both of those books.
Yes. I only read those kinds of books when
Casey forces
the podcast
us.
Makes me.
Yeah. I'm actually going to recommend a movie, because it's a movie that sits with me even today, even though I watched. It's a movie that sits with me that I watched like freshman year of college, called 13th. It's a documentary about the 13th Amendment, which outlawed slavery in America. But there's like a caveat in there that slavery can still kind of exist for the incarcerated. They don't have the same rights. Very interesting. It looks at post-war Reconstruction and Jim Crow South and how the 13th Amendment is weaponized against Black Americans. So if you read this book and wanted more in-depth knowledge on the prison system in America, that is a great watch.
I'm also actually going to add one. Catherine, you sparked something in my mind. So I just watched this documentary called Daughters. It's on Netflix, and it's about men in prison who get the opportunity to participate in a father-daughter dance. So the prison brings in their daughters to spend a few hours with them and to do this like sort of like prom-like dance together. And oh my God, it's so good. It's so sad. But also lots of commentary on the prison industrial complex and what happens to families. So, yeah, very good. Also, some of the same artistic choices, like they never discuss what the men actually did to be in prison. It just kind of takes a look at a snapshot of like them and their families' relationships. So very good.
Okay, well, these are just our opinions. You don't have to agree with us, but feel free to engage with the discussion. You can leave us comments, give us a like, a follow, share us with your friends, and you can find us everywhere at Busy Girls Pod. And if you want to see these book recs, you can go to busygirlspod.com. So hopefully you'll come back and listen again, even though we just gave you a real dark one. And with that, I'm Caitlin.
I'm Casey.
And I'm Catherine. Thanks for listening. And when you get a chance, take a break with the Busy Girls Book Club.